You know, these feasts can actually be quite fun.
Apart from all the wolves who want to kill me.
Aye, apart from that.
He leads me out of his room. Callum said Blake was the most dangerous man here. I suppose I'll soon find out whether or not that is true. As we head down the stairwell, Callum reels off a list of all the foods we can expect to eat this evening. I'm barely listening. I keep having to disentangle my hand from his, only for him to reach for me and enclose my fingers within his once more. I'm not even sure he realizes he's doing it. This kind of over-familiar behavior would not be tolerated in the Southlands, and I wonder whether all wolves are this physical, or whether it's just Callum. I don't hate it, though, and that in itself is rather disconcerting. I'm a betrothed woman, even if I'm supposed to marry a cruel and horrible man. My father would kill me if he saw me holding hands with the Alpha of Highfell. I don't even want to think about what he would do to Callum. Callum's familiarity, however, is not enough to distract me from the high-pitched screeching that hits my ears when we walk into the next corridor. Callum must notice my wince, because he chuckles.
You don't have bagpipes in the south.
He points ahead. There's a young boy, around 10 years old, standing at the entrance of the Great Hall. He has a blue tartan bag nestled beneath his arm, and his cheeks are as red as his hair as he blows into a pipe. He looks like he's about to pass out.
Just be thankful you don't have wolf hearing,
he whispers darkly.
I had to listen to the wee lad practicing.
He gives the boy a thumbs up as we pass by.
Great job, Brody.
An extra shrill note rings my ears as Brody puffs out his chest with pride. A soft laugh escapes my lips. Callum's gaze snaps toward me as we enter the Great Hall, a warm smile spreading across his face. What? I ask. He shrugs.
You have a nice laugh.
When we walk into the entrance hall, my smile fades. In the Southlands, we thought the wolves were too unruly to unite against us. For the centuries that we have been at war, they have fought among themselves, as well as with us. It has been our greatest advantage. Yet, here, within the walls of this castle, there must be over 100 wolves. They shout and laugh and insult one another as they sit along four long tables that are laden with food. The air smells like ale and wood smoke and roast venison. At the end of the hall, beneath a coat of arms that depicts a wolf and a moon, there's a raised dais. At the table atop it sits Robert, the acting wolf king. Callum takes my hand and leads me toward him and the four equally menacing men that sit with him. There's a lull in the crowd as we pass by. I'm not sure why he's taking me toward Robert's table. The wolves sitting there look like the scariest in the hall, each donning a different tartan. Callum drops into one of the vacant seats at the end of the table and gestures that I do the same. Trying not to show my fear, I sit down beside him, the small letter opener pressing into my thigh. Not that it will do me much good if everyone turns on me. It seems like that may be a possibility. Everyone is looking in my direction. Can they smell that I'm a human? Or are they wondering why I'm wearing Callum's clan colours? Callum, however, seems perfectly at ease. His legs are spread, and his elbow rests casually on the table. When Robert looks at him, Callum meets his eye. There's a moment of tension. Then Robert leans back in his seat and forks up a piece of meat before going back to his conversation. The raucous laughter and merriness resumes, even if some of the wolves look at me with a mixture of curiosity and hostility. I spot Fiona, the girl I thought was Callum's wife, at one of the tables. She's wearing a dress like mine, made of red tartan, and her brown hair hangs in waves down her shoulders, though there are a couple of strands of hay in it. She grins and turns back to the person next to her. Isla is sitting at the same table, and she scowls when I catch her eye. Beside me, Callum grabs a plate and starts piling it with food. Potatoes, roasted turnips, venison, thick meat gravy, and blackberry sauce. He places it before me, then helps himself to a plate. I ignore my grumbling stomach. Weren't we supposed to be keeping my presence discreet? I whisper.
The Alphas sit at this table,
His voice is the same volume as mine as he scans the Great Hall.
And I'm an alpha. It would have looked stranger if I'd not sat here.
He stabs a chunk of meat with his fork and puts it into his mouth. Where's Blake? I ask.
No idea. Whenever he crawls out from wherever he's lurking right now, he'll come sit at this table too.
My eyebrows raise. He's an alpha. Blake looks strong, but he isn't big and muscular like Callum or the other males sitting at this table. His accent also indicates he doesn't originate from the Northlands.
There's been some debate over the matter,
says Callum, his voice low.
The last person who questioned it hasn't been seen for a while.
He nods at the entrance to the hall.
Ah, there he is.
Blake stands in the doorway. Like earlier, he's dressed in dark breeches rather than a kilt, and wears a black shirt that is perfectly fitted to his hard chest and torso. His hair is dark, and a couple of errant strands curl against his forehead. He scans the Great Hall, a bored look on his face. When his eyes lock onto mine, a wicked smile spreads across his face. He heads toward us. Chapter 19. Many of the men in this Great Hall remind me of beasts, but there's something different about the dark-haired male who prowls toward us. It's not just that he wears breeches instead of a kilt. It's the calculated disinterest on his face and the fluid way he moves. He reminds me more of a cat than a wolf. People much bigger than him watch him warily as he passes by. When he stops in front of our table, Callum leans back in his seat, a look of dislike etched onto his face.
Brought your pet to the feast, I see, says Blake.
He's almost as tall as Callum, though not as muscular. He looks like he's in his early 20s, like Callum, too. I catch his scent of shadows and pine, like a forest at night.
We need to talk,
says Callum. A slow smile spreads across Blake's face, and dimples puncture his cheeks.
So we do.
While Callum's voice is low and rough, Blake's is smooth like silk.
After we eat.
He looks at the door on the left-hand side of the hall, and Callum inclines his head. Blake drops into a seat by Robert and starts a conversation. I'm not a pet, I say quietly. Blake meets my eyes and smirks. Again, I feel that small tug of recognition. I wonder if I saw him at my father's palace. If I did, what on earth is he doing here?
No, of course not.
Callum says absently. Stabbing a potato. What if he says something about me to Robert?
He won't. He's a self-interested prick. He'll want to find out what you're doing here in case there's a way for him to exploit it.
Continues Callum, lowering his voice.
There are too many ears in this hall. We'll speak with him later.
He nods at my plate.
Enjoy your food. It's good, I promise.
The Great Hall gets louder with bagpipes, shouting, and slurred song as the night progresses. I'm starting to enjoy the music, although that could be because a small troupe of musicians have taken over from 10-year-old Brody. While it's difficult to imagine anyone could turn into a wolf, the people at the feast move and shout and dance as though no sense of propriety binds them. A fight has broken out by the entrance, and a man and a woman are kissing against the far wall. I watch, fascinated, as I eat. I count 6 different clan colours running through the hall, 2 different blues, a yellow, 2 greens, and the red that Callum wears. That means the Wolf King, whoever he is, must have united 6 clans, perhaps 7. Blake, dressed all in black, is certainly set apart from the rest, and I wonder if his people are elsewhere. People approach Callum throughout the evening, speaking to him deferentially, and dipping their heads when addressing him. Some ask about the siege and the whereabouts of the other wolves who still haven't returned. Callum tells them he sent someone out to look for them, his jaw tensing as he relays this information. He must be worried about Ryan. I am too. I've no doubt Sebastian will have sent men after me. What if they caught up with the group Callum and I left behind? A couple of hours into the feast, Blake finally gets up.
He weaves through the crowd and exits the great hall through the door he nodded at earlier. Callum waits a couple of minutes before rising.
Ready?
My limbs are stiff, either from the horse riding or from sitting down for so long, but I let Callum steer me through the boisterous crowd. His huge body creates a protective bubble around me. When we reach the door Blake went through, Callum puts a hand flat on my stomach and I still. His warm breath tickles my ear.
Just to warn you, wolves tend to use this room on nights such as this when they want a bit of privacy.
That's good, isn't it? That's what we want.
Aye.
He says carefully.
But others may want privacy for a different reason, if you catch my drift.
I don't, but I nod anyway.
When we get in there, I'll need to tell Blake I've taken you prisoner.
He says.
That's not the way that I see you, okay?
He opens the door and hustles me inside. The room is warm and dark, full of nooks and alcoves and small round tables where candles flicker. It smells like wood smoke and spice, and it takes my eyes a moment to adjust. There's a woman straddling a man on the leather armchair to our right. The top of her dress is pulled down, exposing her breasts, and the male has his mouth around one of her nipples. She rocks against him, moaning softly. I gasp, jerking my head in the opposite direction. Callum nudges me forward.
It's okay. Keep walking.
We head toward the hearth at the end of the room. There are two armchairs facing it, and Blake sits back in one of them, his long legs stretched out in front of him toward the crackling flames. When we reach him, I look for a third space to sit down, but Callum hooks his arm around my waist and drops down into the vacant armchair, pulling me down onto his lap. When I try to get back up, his arm tightens around me. Blake watches our almost imperceptible struggle, his dark eyes glinting. He leans forward.
Caught yourself a little rabbit, have you, Callum?
He says. Chapter 20. My mouth dries. Blake's gaze pins me to the spot, while Callum's thick arm holds me against his chest. I'm not used to being so close to a male. Back at the palace, I had to dance and smile and sweet-talk nobles at social gatherings. If any of them had held me like this, they would have been executed. This is not appropriate, and it's certainly not the way I wanted to meet the male that Callum said is the most dangerous wolf in the Northlands. But it is the strange heat pulsing beneath my skin that finally makes me try to shuffle out of Callum's grasp.
Behave,
growls Callum, and I stiffen. He has not used this tone on me before, and panic surges through me. Have I misjudged this male? But then I remember he was going to tell Blake I was his prisoner. I do not see how that can work to our advantage, though. If Blake knows who I am, then it only makes me look weak. Before I can decide how to react, Blake takes my hand in his and presses his lips to my knuckles. I freeze.
It's a pleasure to meet you, little rabbit, he says.
A low growl rumbles in Callum's chest, and the corner of Blake's lip quirks before he releases me.
You remind me of someone I saw back at the Southlands Palace, says Blake. Did you know that the daughter of the king has red hair? Just like yours.
Give it a rest, Blake,
growls Callum.
I know you know who she is.
Blake sighs, before leaning back in his chair and reaching for a glass of wine on the round table beside him.
Very well. Let's be direct with one another, if you don't want to play.
Where's James?
Asks Callum.
There was a disturbance near the border. He went to sort it.
Blake sips his wine.
You intend to trade her for the Heart of the Moon, I suppose.
Aye.
If the wolves find out who she really is, they'll tear her apart.
I frown. Must they speak about me as if I'm not even here? But then Blake's eyes move to mine. Curiosity ripples off him.
Why did you choose to come here, little rabbit?
She didn't choose. I took her,
says Callum.
And I've just told you why.
Very well. I'm interested in how this is all going to play out. I'll keep your secret.
If Magnus gets back before James, he could cause some trouble,
says Callum.
Are you asking for my help, Callum?
Aye.
Callum grits out.
Say please.
Callum's thighs tense beneath me, and I can feel the restraint in his chest. If he launches himself at Blake like I sense he wants to, we're going to be in trouble. Please, I say, giving him a hard look. Blake's grin widens, and again I notice the dimples in his cheeks.
Looks like your pet has better manners than you, Callum. Very well. I'll deal with Magnus.
He turns his attention back to Callum.
And you can put your rabbit in a hutch for safekeeping. The chambers in the Western Tower are empty.
She stays with me,
says Callum. Blake puts his glass down on the table. In a sudden movement, he reaches for me. Callum grabs his wrist, stopping him. I'm jolted forward.
Look at you, says Blake. You're like a dog guarding his favorite chew toy. What happens when you decide you want to play with it?
She's my prisoner,
says Callum. Blake chuckles.
Please, you're not a kidnapper, Callum. You're a savior. Perhaps you told yourself that you brought her here for the Heart of the Moon, but we both know the truth. You saw a woman who needed saving, and you wanted to be the one to do so. She'll stay in the room in the tower, where we can both keep an eye on her.
No,
says Callum.
You truly wish for me to believe you are holding her captive?
Blake arches an eyebrow.
Fine. Prove it. Make her do something.
His lips curve into a smile.
Tell her to come and sit with me.
That is not... I splutter.
The day I feel the need to prove myself to you is the day I relinquish my title as Alpha of Hyphael,
says Callum. Blake somehow manages to look bored, even with Callum tightly gripping his wrist.
If you want my help, you'll put her in the tower.
No.
Fine. Keep her in your room. Have her sleep in your bed.
Panic, mingled with something else, surges through my body.
Out of interest, have you had many dealings with noblemen in the South?
Blake continues conversationally.
I have. They're a primitive lot. Did you know they require their brides to be untouched? Did you know on occasion? They check.
The blood drains from my face, and Callum's biceps clench.
What's that got to do with anything?
Well, I'm curious, Callum. How do you expect to get her betrothed to agree to a trade, when it's only a matter of time before you have your cock buried inside her?
My cheeks flame. That's not...
That's enough, Blake,
growls Callum.
She'll be staying where I can keep an eye on her.
The room in the tower is close to my chambers and to yours. Do you think anyone would be foolish enough to try anything with either of us so close? She'll be perfectly safe.
She's too valuable to risk.
And what of the Heart of the Moon?
Asks Blake.
How valuable is that? How will you trade her?
I jerk forward, freeing myself from both of them and stumbling across the flagstones. Both turn their heads toward me. Callum's body is hard with tension, whereas Blake seems merely intrigued. I've had enough of this charade. Blake knows who I am, and he seems to have the measure of Callum as well. Does my opinion factor into the equation? I ask. Or are you going to keep on speaking about me as if I'm not here? Blake's eyes gleam, while Callum looks a little sheepish. He releases Blake, and the dark-haired wolf leans back, resting his elbow casually on the arm of his chair.
What is it that you want, princess?
Callum asks, seemingly realizing the pretense is over. Freedom. That is what I want. I want to be free from Sebastian, and to not have my fate determined by powerful men. For that to happen, I need to be alone so I can figure out my next move. I can't plot against the wolves and find out more information about the Heart of the Moon and the Wolf King if I am kept in Callum's room, in his bed. I'll need my own chambers, I say. If Sebastian found out that I'd shared a room with another man, I'd lose my value. You heard what he said back at the castle. The muscles along Callum's jaw tighten. He sighs and inclines his head.
Very well,
he says.
But I have a condition, and I don't think you're going to like it.
Chapter 21. It could be my imagination, but Callum looks a little uncomfortable. Blake, however, is grinning. He has one ankle on his knee. Again, he reminds me of a cat. This time, a cat who has found a couple of mice to play with. Whatever this condition is, it cannot be good for me.
You know, I didn't take you for someone who would engage in such an archaic tradition, Callum,
says Blake.
Aye. Well, it'll keep her safe until we can get the Heart of the Moon.
The Heart of the Moon? Yes, that's the reason.
Blake's eyes glint in the firelight. What condition? I ask.
I'll tell you when we get upstairs.
Callum gets up.
Come on, it's been a long night. You must be tired.
You really should challenge him for the title, you know,
says Blake. Callum turns back around.
Who?
His tone is weighted.
Rob, of course.
Blake picks up his wine glass. Who else?
That would cause trouble, and you know it.
You're the rightful second in command. They're going to think you're weak.
Only weak men feel the need to assert their dominance.
For once, you and I agree on something,
says Blake.
Others do not. You need to play the game sometimes, Callum.
And you should take a break from the game every once in a while, Blake. There are more important things than power.
Blake's gaze falls onto me for a moment, before a slow smile spreads across his face.
Not for me,
he says. My eyelids are heavy when Callum and I stop on a small, torchlit landing in the castle's turret. My breath mists in front of my face, but the labored climb has me hot and bothered. I'm not used to so much exercise. Callum hasn't even broken a sweat. You said there was a condition, I say, suppressing a yawn.
Aye.
Callum pushes open a small wooden door.
It can wait until morning.
He nudges me inside. The room is small and filled with books. There are piles of them on a writing desk, and they fill the rickety shelf beside it. There are even some stacked on the floorboards in one corner. Against the wall, there's a single bed. There's a scent in the air that seems familiar, but I can't place it. Can Blake truly deal with Magnus? I ask. My insides twist with hate when I think of the wolf who burst into my bedchambers back in the Borderlands. He threatened me twice. I'd have thought Callum would be better equipped to deal with a male like that. While Callum has been gentle with me, I saw him in the fighting ring. I know he would be a terrifying opponent. Blake emitted a dark undercurrent of violence too, but it seemed more calculated and sharp, like a blade rather than a hammer.
Blake has leverage on a lot of the wolves here.
Callum's eyes harden on the candle that flickers on the bedside table, as though it displeases him before he continues.
He's got something on Magnus. I don't know what, but if anyone can keep him in check without me murdering him and losing his clan support, it's Blake.
When Callum opens the wardrobe, a low growl rumbles in his chest. It's full of clothes.
The prick knew I'd agree to you staying here,
he says.
He's had someone prepare the room.
He pulls out a white nightdress and hands it to me. It looks like it's exactly my size.
It's clean,
he says. Oh, thank you. I shift from one foot to another, and Callum chews the inside of his cheek. For the first time since I met him, he seems at a loss for what to do next. There's a strange energy in the air. You can go now, I say. His eyes widen. A slow grin spreads across his face, lightening his features. What? I ask, folding my arms.
I've not been dismissed since I was a wee lad pestering my parents,
he says.
He inclines his head. He walks to the door, but lingers in the doorway.
I'll come for you in the morning, and we'll talk about my condition for having your own room. If you agree, I'll show you around the grounds.
And if I don't? He raises an eyebrow.
You'll be sharing a room with me for the rest of your time here.
Something in his expression changes, and I wonder if he can hear the quickening of my pulse.
Good night, princess,
he says, his voice a little rough. He walks out of the room and closes the door behind him. The thought of being pulled onto his lap, his hard thighs beneath mine, flashes through my mind. I push it away. Good night, I reply quietly. Though he doesn't respond, I am sure that with his wolf hearing, he heard me. Chapter 22. I have been alone since my mother died. The loneliness has always spread through my body like rot. Even though I am continuously surrounded by people, it has lurked beneath my skin and threatened to consume me. This morning, when I wake up alone, it feels different. It's an alone where I can hear my own thoughts. They mingle with the gentle patter of rain against the thin window. For once, I don't have to perform to anyone, because there are no ladies in waiting ushering me out of bed. Instead, I can lie bundled up in the soft quilt in a room filled with intriguing piles of books and sweet-scented herbs. This morning, I am not the king's daughter, or Sebastian's wife, or a princess with duties. I am just me. A thrill surges through my body. There are so many things I should be worrying about. The wolves, the inevitability of Sebastian's army finding me, Blake telling the acting wolf king who I am, and Callum. Callum, and whatever condition he wants me to agree to in order for me to keep my own room. Callum is so unlike anyone I have met before. He is lacking in decorum, and he continually behaves in a manner I am not used to. He teases me and asks me questions and touches me. And the worst thing is, I'm not sure I dislike it. Right now, I feel at peace, content, free. I lie here for around 20 minutes, savoring the feeling. My eyes catch on the wardrobe. I was too tired to investigate last night, but I'm curious about what clothes are in there. Today, I intend to learn as much about the wolves as I can, and I'm hoping I'll have a little more control over how I present myself than I did yesterday. I stretch, my limbs aching from being on horseback for 2 days. I limp across the room and throw open the wardrobe. I'm pleasantly surprised by what I see. There is an array of dresses waiting for me. They're all made from dark materials, black, greys, and navy blues. I skim my fingers along them, noting most are simple enough for me to put on without assistance, and all are well made. There's an elegant black dress in particular that catches my eye, made with silk and intricate lace. It emits power. I run my fingers over it. It is not appropriate for today, though. I want to fit in, not draw attention. I notice a couple of pairs of breeches in here, too. In the Southlands, women do not dress in such garments. My father would probably disown me if he saw me wearing clothes like these. Perhaps I'll try them another day. Instead, I select a simple brown dress that should make me look non-threatening and put it on. I'm pulling my fingers through my hair when someone taps against the door. My breath hitches, because I know who it will be.
Can I come in, princess?
Asks Callum. When I open the door, he's wearing the same clothes as last night. A couple of the top buttons of his cream linen shirt are undone, and the sleeves are rolled up to his elbows. His jaw is shadowed with stubble, and I wonder if he slept. His eyes are still bright, though.
You look nice,
he says. Compliments seem to come so easily to him, and they seem sincere. It is unnerving. I walk toward the window so that he can't see my smile. Thank you. The sky is full of grey clouds, and rain ricochets off the loch. The scenery, and the weather,
is so different to the sun-drenched city beyond the Southland's palace walls. Callum comes to stand behind me, and his scorching body heat burns into my back.
Miserable day, isn't it?
He says.
It rains a lot up here. I don't suppose you're used to such weather down in the south.
Have you ever been? To the south? Beyond the borderlands, I mean.
Everything's south when you're from Highfell.
I hear the smile in his voice.
Aye, I visited King's City once. About, must have been 5 years ago.
To cause trouble, I presume? He laughs.
No. I was looking for someone. I thought she might be there.
A strange feeling surges through my body. You were looking for a lover?
A lover? No.
He sighs.
I was looking for my mother.
I glance up at him. He's staring out of the window, a pensive look on his face. Something softens inside me. Why would she be in the Southlands? He chews his bottom lip.
She went missing one night. My father thought she was taken by humans. She was presumed dead, but...
He shakes his head.
I never bought it. I think she ran away.
My eyebrows knit together. Why would she do that? Callum swallows.
My father was... He was a difficult man.
Oh, I say softly. Did you find her? He offers me a sad smile.
No.
A long silence stretches between us as we both stare out of the window. The trees beyond the loch whisper in the breeze, and there are no people in sight. Again, peace washes over me. Until Callum sighs.
So, about this condition I have for you staying in here.
He says. I turn to face him, and I have to tilt my head back to meet his gaze. What is it? He pulls a small black box from the pocket of his kilt. He stares at it for a moment. Then he exhales, before passing it to me. I frown as I open it. Inside, there's a red tartan ribbon with a crimson jewel attached to the front. What is this? I ask.
It's a necklace.
Callum rubs the back of his neck. I take it out of the box. The length is short. This is not a necklace. It's a collar. He has the good grace to look a little sheepish.
It's an old tradition.
Callum clears his throat.
When an alpha is in an intimate relationship, they can ask their partner to wear one of these. It signals to the rest of the pack that they're spoken for.
He swallows, and his jawline hardens. His eyes smoulder with intensity.
If you wear this, it signals that you're mine.
Chapter 23. The red strip of material hangs from my fingertips, and my jaw sets. Indignation rises within me. You cannot possibly expect me to put this on. It is degrading. It's a collar, I say.
Don't think of it that way.
I drop it back into the box and thrust it back at Callum. I won't wear it.
It's not much different than a wedding band.
And you'll see, I am not wearing one of those either.
You would have worn one if I'd left you at the borderlands.
So that is my choice, to belong to Sebastian or to belong to you. Callum's jaw tightens.
Surely I'm the better choice, eh?
My gaze dips down to his crumpled shirt, straining over tensed muscles, then back up to his eyes. They burn into mine, and my heart beats a little faster. The first time I saw Callum, I thought him a monster. He looked like one in that fighting ring, his broad chest bare, his torso as hard as rock. Yet the true monster that night was sitting beside me. He threatened to take me like a common mutt on our wedding night. He said he'd throw me into the kennels after for Callum to use in the same way. The thought filled me with fear, but I know now Callum would never have hurt me in that way. Even though he is a powerful enemy of my people, I cannot deny the truth. He is the better choice. I swallow. That is not the point.
No,
says Callum, raising his eyebrows.
The point is, it'll keep you safe. No one will touch you if they know that you're mine.
People will already know you brought me here. Wearing this is needless.
No, Princess, it's not.
He shakes his head.
Telling people, it's not the same. We may not have noblemen and ladies like you have in the South, but we have rules and laws and traditions. Like, if I were to challenge Rob and win, I would take his clan and title.
He nods at the item in my hand.
Wear this and you won't be harmed. It's wolf law. Unbreakable, inevitable. Just as we are bound to the moon and must shift when she touches us.
I note how the red jewel refracts the morning light. Would you wear one of these? I ask.
Course I wouldn't. It's different.
Why?
Because I'm an alpha.
And I'm a princess. He groans and rubs his face.
Oh, you're impossible. That's what you are.
And you aren't. He folds his big arms across his chest, and I fold mine, taking a step toward him. I agreed to come here in exchange for my freedom, I say. Belonging to you while I'm here, then being shipped off back to Sebastian when you're done with me, is hardly freedom, is it? That was our deal. That was my condition. A strangled noise escapes his lips.
Don't you see? This gives you your freedom. You can stay in this room. You can wander around the castle by yourself if you wish.
He points at the window.
You can even go for walks outside. No one will touch you. You'll be free.
He steps forward so that we're only inches apart, and his scent envelops me.
The full moon is getting closer, Princess. We've got a wolf inside of us, all of us.
He puts a hand on his chest.
It affects us as it gets closer. It brings out certain instincts. You're not safe. Not unless you wear this. Not unless people think you're mine.
I shake my head. No, it's demeaning. I'm not doing it. Callum closes his eyes.
Yalach, give me strength.
He walks past me, drops the small box on the bed, then walks to the door. Where are we going? I ask.
I'm going to get some breakfast. You can stay here and think about your choices. Wear that or have me at your side 24/7.
He leans in the doorway, and the corner of his lip quirks.
Unless that's what you want, Princess.
No. I march toward him. I'm hungry. I'm coming too. He laughs darkly.
Oh, I don't think so.
I put my hand on his stomach in an attempt to push him away. Then I still. His torso is solid, and I can feel the ridges of his muscles through his linen shirt. His body heat sears my fingertips. I have never touched a man like this before. My gaze flits up to his. The humor has gone from his eyes, and just for a second, before he blinks a couple of times, I think I see his irises change shape. I pull away as if I have been burned and take a big step back. I'm sorry, I mumble, then hate myself for apologizing. Hasn't he manhandled me enough times since we met? He looks at me curiously, his expression softening.
You don't have to apologize for touching me, Princess.
He raises an eyebrow.
Now, if you want to apologize for being as stubborn as an ox, well, that's a different matter.
He looks at the small box on the bed.
Think about it. I'll be back shortly when you've considered your options.
And with that, he turns and leaves me alone. I sigh and go and sit on the bed. I pick up the small box and look at the offending item inside once more. In my lifetime, I have done many things I have not wanted to do to ensure my survival. I didn't want to marry Sebastian to help my father secure the North, but I was planning to do it regardless, because I feared what would happen to me if I didn't.
Putting this on would be the wise thing to do. If Callum is telling the truth, it would allow me to freely walk around the castle and learn about the wolves. Who else in the Southlands would ever have such an opportunity? On the other hand, it is degrading. Even if I cast aside what my father would think, I have to consider my future. My people would never respect me if I put this on. What's more, Callum got frustrated with me when I refused. I don't know why, but that satisfied me. He is so big and strong and in control. It makes me wonder what will happen if he loses it. What will happen if I provoke the wolf behind the man? I drop the box back down onto the mattress beside me. If anything, I'd like to see what Callum does if I offer a little resistance. He deserves it for not bringing me any breakfast. My stomach grumbles as I continue my exploration of my new chambers. There are books everywhere. I pick out a healer's encyclopedia, a collection of diseases and ailments, and a compendium of poisons from among the titles. One dusty tome in particular catches my eye. Experiments, Book 1, is handwritten in an almost illegible scrawl across the thick spine. I open it on a random page. Wolves' Healing Times is written in blotchy letters across the top of the parchment. Tool, iron knife. Insertion made along subject 13's lower torso, 1 inch deep. Healing time approximately 3 minutes, significantly faster than when cut with silver. If the blade was poisoned, would the substance linger beneath the skin? Test theory tomorrow. Goddess, did the former resident of these chambers write this book? I shudder, yet cannot help but flick to another page. If I remove a wolf's organs, will they grow back? Is written along the top of the parchment. Someone knocks on the door, and I look up, startled, dropping the macabre book on my mattress. It lands with a thud and releases a cloud of dust. Has Callum realized he was harsh to leave me alone without breakfast? Or is it someone else? I tiptoe to the door. Who is it? Can I come in? The voice is female and familiar. Before I respond, Fiona walks into the room, bringing the earthy scent of horses with her. She's carrying a tray that has a teapot and chipped cup, a bowl of steaming porridge, and a small pot of honey atop it. On Callum's orders. She brushes aside a stack of papers and sets the tray down on the writing desk. I'm also under strict orders that I'm not, under any circumstances, to tell you Callum was the one who told me to bring it up to you. She grins over her shoulder, her brown eyes glinting. So why did you tell me? I ask. Because he's a good man, and I don't see the point in hiding that. She turns and leans back against the desk, her gaze narrowing on the small box on my bed. From her expression, I wonder if she disapproves of it as much as I do. He told me who you are and why he brought you here, she says. He also said you were being difficult. I fold my arms. Well, what does he expect? He expects you to treat him as your alpha and to do everything he says. And he doesn't know what to do with you. No, he's found out you won't. He doesn't like people saying no to him, does he? Oh, I think he does, actually. He's not used to it. She nods at the collar. You don't want to wear it? Why? I assess her, wondering whether to tell her the truth. Back home, the ladies who would keep me company at balls or on walks in the grounds would go along with anything I said, wanting desperately to gain my favor and the favor of the king. I get the impression that, for once, I can have a candid conversation. Perhaps she'll even understand. My whole life, I have been treated like a prize or a possession. I sigh. I don't know. I thought it might be different here, like maybe I could be something or someone else. If I wear that thing, I just belong to another man. It's the same as back home. She nods. I get that. You know, it's freer up here for females than it is in the Southlands. We can fight and work in the stables, and we have a say in the clan politics. But you'll have noticed that there were no females sitting at that alpha table in the Great Hall last night. And there are certain old wolf traditions that, in my opinion, should be wiped out. She nods at the small box. If it makes you feel any better, Callum doesn't like it as a tradition either, and wearing it will give you the freedom to go about the castle without fear. She bites her bottom lip and looks like she's deciding whether or not to tell me something. Honestly, I'm surprised he decided to give it to you. The cost is as high for him as it is for you. My eyebrows knit together. What do you mean? Perhaps he'll explain it to you sometime. She pushes off from the desk and walks back to the door. You should wear it, though. The full moon is coming, and you're a human. Her eyes darken in the morning light. You'll need all the protection you can get when she rises. Perhaps she is right, but I cannot bring myself to put on the collar. The next few days pass by in a similar manner. I wake up aching and sore, my muscles stiff from the journey here. Callum visits in the morning. Fiona brings me porridge and berries and fresh tea at breakfast time. And a lady in waiting visits in the evening to bring me potted pies and cuts of meat and bread. When I am alone, I explore my small bedchambers while the rain patters against the window. I read more of that horrible book of experiments, flicking through pages titled The Effects of Wolfsbane on a Wolf's Ability to Heal, The Order in Which a Wolf's Bones Break When They Shift, and Provoking the Inner Wolf, a Half-Wolf's Response to Emotional Trauma. I am certain I do not want to meet the person who stayed in this room before me. I find myself looking forward to Callum's visits, where he inappropriately sits on my bed or stands by the window and shares snippets of his life with me. He tells me about his clan's castle, which is so far north that it barely sees sunlight, about hunting in the forests as he was growing up, and about breaking his leg when he was a boy, climbing down into Glen Yarloch to find an old temple dedicated to the Elder Wolf. Despite his frustration with me that first morning, he doesn't push too hard about the collar.
You know, some would think it an honor to wear,
he tells me one morning. Like who? Isla? I cross my arms. She practically swooned over him when we first arrived at the castle. I bet she would love to belong to him. A slow grin spreads across Callum's face at that.
Aye, like Isla.
I scowl and tell him to leave.
But I'd prefer it if you wore it, Princess.
A traitorous smile crosses my lips that I quickly hide from him. I know I should just end this stupid morning ritual, yet I cannot quite bring myself to do it. The days are peaceful, and a part of my soul I didn't even know was broken feels as if it is slowly starting to heal. Strangely, Callum seems to be enjoying our newfound routine as much as I am, though he appears increasingly disheveled each morning. A small seed of guilt begins to sprout in my chest. Is he not sleeping because of me? Has he been standing guard at night? It is a conversation with Fiona on the third night, when she brings up my dinner, that finally seals my fate. Have you had word of the others? I ask her, cutting into a piece of venison pie as I sit at the desk. The ones who escaped Sebastian's castle with us. She's lying on my bed, her hands clasped behind her head, her dirty boots on my bedspread. I have never had a friend before. My days were full of false smiles and fake laughs. Everyone was too afraid of my father to say anything that wasn't superficial. A small part of me wonders if it could be different with Fiona, but I push the thought away. Why would she want to be friends with the daughter of an enemy king? No, she says. We think something's happened to them. Callum sent a party out to find them. He wants to go too. He's worried about the lad, Ryan. Well, I put down my fork, frowning. Why won't he go? She turns her head and arches her eyebrow pointedly. Oh, I say quietly, my appetite waning. Because of me. The next morning, I wake up early and watch the sun rise over the loch. When I'm finally traded back to my people, I'm determined to be of more value to my father than a prize to be given to Sebastian. If I can prove that, I will be free on my own terms. And if wearing the collar will allow me to do that, I should do so. It will allow me to explore this castle
and find out its secrets. I'm doing this for me, not for Callum. Before I can think too much about it, I open the box, pick up the collar, and fasten it around my neck. It's restrictive, a reminder that I'm allowing myself to belong to yet another man, or at least for it to look that way. The jewel is cool against my skin, and I feel its weight, heavy and prominent, just as I'm sure I will feel the weight of this choice in the days to come. Feeling a little lightheaded, I sit down on the edge of the mattress and clasp my hands together. It's not long before there's a heavy knock at the door. My heart jumps into my throat as I stand up. Come in, I say. When Callum enters, his gaze instantly dips to my neck. His jaw tightens. If I wear this, I can keep my own room and wander, unsupervised, through the castle, I say. He runs a hand over his mouth.
Aye.
His voice is a little rough. Okay, I say. He sucks in a deep breath.
Okay. But if you wear that in public, there are things that will be expected of you. Things that will reflect badly on me if you take no heed of them.
His eyes are serious, verging on stern, as they bore into mine.
So, we need to go over some ground rules.
Chapter 24. Ground rules. I narrow my eyes. Callum sighs, then nods at the bed.
Why don't you take a seat?
I'd prefer to stand. He huffs out a laugh.
This is the first rule. If I ask you to do something, I need you to do it.
Why?
Because I'm an alpha, and it's expected.
So alphas are so fragile they cannot bear to be challenged on anything? I cocked my head to the side. I think you are a lot more similar to Southland's lords than you realise. A soft grunt of displeasure scrapes against his throat as he folds his big arms. I have to stop myself from staring at the way his biceps strain against his sleeves. I have to suppress my smile, too. Why is it so satisfying to get a rise out of him?
No,
he mumbles.
It's not like that.
The corner of my lip twitches. What is it like? He sighs.
Yeah, okay, I suppose it is a wee bit like that. I'll look weak if you challenge me. And if I look weak, that puts you in danger, aye?
I roll my eyes. Fine, but if you ask me to do anything degrading, I swear on the Sun Goddess, I will make you look so weak.
I won't, Rory. I promise I will not ask you to do anything that will cause you harm, nor compromise your morals or integrity. And in return, while you will be mine, I will be yours too. I will be your alpha. And I promise to take care of you, for as long as you're here with me.
I am held captive by his gaze. Something stirs inside me, warm, and it spreads through my body and seems to thaw my soul. Oh, I say softly. I should find everything he is saying abhorrent. But for the first time since my mother died, someone is offering to take care of me. I've been alone for so long that a part of me has forgotten how that feels. I turn away from him and go and sit on the bed so he can't see the effect he's having on me.
There's another thing,
he says. He follows me, then crouches down. The floorboards creak beneath his weight. He runs his thumb along the ribbon around my neck, and I forget how to breathe.
People know I do not like this as a tradition,
he says.
When they see you wearing it, they're going to think one of two things. One is the truth. They're going to think I'm hiding something from them and protecting you because you're important. We cannot let them think that.
Because someone might challenge you, I ask.
Aye, and I'd win. Make no mistake about that.
I fight my smile. It would seem like arrogance if anyone else said it, but with him, I actually believe it.
But it would cause a messy political situation, and James, the king, wouldn't be too pleased with me.
What is the other option?
If you're wearing that, people are going to think we have been intimate with one another. Do you understand what I'm seeing?
The memory of what Magnus did to that woman in the kennels floods my mind. He had her on her knees, moaning, as he thrust into her from behind. Sebastian said that that is how all wolves take their women. People will think I have done that with Callum. My gaze drops to his broad chest and his shirt collar, unbuttoned to expose his thick neck. His hands are on the bed by my thighs, and I think of them grabbing my hips. I imagine him flipping me over and taking his pleasure from me. A spark of heat flickers inside me.
If you wear that, people are going to think you're my meat,
he says.
It is the only other explanation for why I would have given you this, and we must encourage this explanation.
Your mate?
It's a wolf thing. Rare but powerful. Stronger even than love. Two souls chosen by the moon goddess to be together. Their fates entwined. So.
He gives me a sheepish grin.
I may have to touch you from time to time.
You do that anyway.
And you may have to act as if you actually like me, princess.
I do like you. His smile widens.
Well, that's good then, isn't it? Because I like you too. Now, can you agree to all this?
I must act as if he is my lover. The thought makes my heart race a little faster. Slowly, I nod. I suppose, if I must.
Good. Now, come. There's something I want to show you.
The dark waters of the loch ripple. On the far side, there's nothing but green, craggy mountains. To our left, there's a large forest. The wind is gentle today. It whispers through my hair and carries the scent of peat and heather. Swords clang in the castle courtyard behind us, but we're beyond the outer walls, and our spot is deserted. A few people looked in our direction when we passed by, but the dark cloak I found in the wardrobe hides the collar well enough. I said that I'd wear it. I didn't say I'd display it. Callum and I sit on the damp grass. He pulls out a hunk of bread he stole from the kitchens and breaks it in two, passing me half. I take a bite, then stretch out my legs, wincing at the ache that pervades.
You're still in pain from riding?
He asks, arching an eyebrow.
Yalach, it's been, what, 4 days?
We can't all be big muscly wolves like you. He laughs.
Aye, that may be true. 4 days. Do all humans take this long to heal? Because if so, perhaps we won't need the heart of the moon to beat you after all.
There's a teasing glint in his eye, and I raise my chin. You know, I may not be a big bloodthirsty warrior, but I'm sure there are things I can do better than you.
Oh, aye? Like what?
I shrug. I have some skills in healing and apothecary. I'd had to. I tended to my mother a lot as a child, then developed an interest in it after she died. I always wondered if I could have saved her, if I'd just known the right combination of herbs. And I do a lot of needlework, too, back home. He tears off a chunk of bread with his teeth and chews.
You like to sew?
I wasn't allowed to do much else. I was ill for a lot of my childhood, and my father would never let me go out and do the fun things the other children were allowed to do. I shrug. It wasn't appropriate for my station, so I found my own ways to pass the time.
What kinds of things do you like to sew?
Dresses, mostly. I love fashion. I swallow. And my mother taught me how to embroider. I liked to create the scene she would tell me in her stories as a child. I would pretend I was living in them. I shake my head. It's silly, really.
No,
he says.
It doesn't sound silly at all. What else do you like to do?
Well, I like to read, I suppose.
Another thing you're probably better at than me.
Callum rests his arms on his raised knees as he looks out onto the water. You can't read?
I can. Not well. My mother taught me when I was a wee lad, but my father never thought it was important. He...
Callum stiffens, and the hairs on the back of my neck prickle. We both look over our shoulders. Blake leans against the outer wall of the castle, around 300 feet behind us. He's speaking to a girl who is carrying a dead pheasant, but his eyes are on me. His gaze drops to my neck, and the corner of his lip quirks.
Blake,
growls Callum.
What does he want?
When the girl leaves, Blake walks toward us with his hands in the pockets of his breeches. Halfway across the grassy expanse, he halts. Callum sniffs the air, then jumps to his feet. The two of them turn their heads toward the hill on the other side of the castle. What is it? I ask, alarmed, as I get up.
Horses, Fergus, Magnus, and Ryan.
Callum's body is rigid, his breathing hard.
They're coming. I can smell them. And blood. I smell blood. Lots of blood.
He swallows, and his face whitens.
Ryan's blood.
Chapter 25. Something seems to pass between the two males. Blake inclines his head. He walks back toward the castle, the breeze ruffling his dark hair. In the distance, I hear shouting and the thunder of hooves.
If Magnus tells anyone who she is, I'll kill you.
Callum is breathing hard, his teeth gritted and his jawline tense. Even 100 feet away, Blake hears him, looks over his shoulder, and arches an eyebrow. He says something I can't hear, and a low growl vibrates in Callum's chest.
Don't you think I know that?
He says.
Just get on with it and be quick.
Blake's lips curve, but he walks a little faster and disappears around the castle walls. Callum is breathing fast.
Stay close to me.
We hurry across the grass, Callum taking care to keep stride with me. When a cry of pain rattles through the air, he breaks into a run. I chase after him. I stumble into chaos when I reach the courtyard, and I lose sight of him. The air is loud with raised voices, and wolves are gathering. It feels like the hours before a storm, when the air is thick and static, and something is about to break. A voice to my left shouts something derogatory about my father. Another promises to take something from Sebastian and kill it slowly. Another yells that all southerners will die. The skin on my arms turns to goose flesh. The crowd has swallowed me. My shoulders are knocked by big muscular arms, and I catch flashes of weapons and clan colors and eyes filled with hate. I need to find Callum. If these wolves realize I'm the king's daughter, I'll be torn apart. I don't think a collar will save me now. I'm not sure even Callum can. A part of me wonders if he will even notice if they descend upon me. Someone from his clan has been injured. He is distracted. He has more important things to be worrying about than me. I push toward the center of the crowd, and the metallic scent of blood hits me in a wave. My stomach turns. Crimson paints the cobbled stones ahead. Callum stands deathly still in the eye of the storm. He says something to Fergus and Becky, the young kitchen maid rescued from Sebastian's castle. He grabs the pale body slung over one of two horses and holds it over his shoulder. Becky lets out a cry that's audible, even over all the noise. Her face is streaked with tears and blood. My heart stills. Ryan. He is barely breathing. His eyes are closed, and there's a purple mark across his cheek where he's been struck. His shirt is drenched with blood, and his copper hair is slick with sweat. I hurry closer, causing a male in a blue kilt closest to the horses to curse at me.
Watch where you're going, lassie!
His nostrils flare, and then his features harden.
Human? Hey!
He looks around him.
There's a southern bitch!
Callum turns around, and time seems to stop. A low growl reverberates from his chest, vibrating at such a frequency it rumbles around the courtyard. He has growled a few times in my presence, but this time it is pure animal. It reminds me of what he is, a wolf, A killer. An alpha.
A hush falls over the courtyard. Eyes flick toward the source of Callum's displeasure, and the wolf in the blue kilt steps back. The mob looks at me. The hairs on the back of my neck raise as a whisper passes from mouth to mouth. Human. I want to run, to hide, but I can't. I'm surrounded. A gust of wind sweeps my hair out of my face, exposing my neck and the collar. Another current of emotion passes through the crowd. Someone growls. A female spits on the floor.
She's mine,
says Callum. My mouth dries at the power he commands. His gaze seeks mine, and I raise my chin. He nods, and I nod in return. Then time speeds up again. With Ryan over his shoulder, Callum strides toward the castle doors.
Fergus, go get the healer.
Callum says the word healer as though it tastes bad.